The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
United States to Carl Thomas and Marion McKeown. And Carl, nationally syndicated US columnist, I want to ask you about Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who's to be Kamala Harris's running mate in the presidential election in November. What do you make of him?
Well, Matt, there's plenty to say about him, and Republicans are saying plenty, but I think all anybody needs to know is that he has been endorsed by Bernie Sanders. This is the most left-wing ticket that I've ever seen in my over 40 years of covering politics in Washington and nationally. This is a guy who supports biological men playing in girls' school sports in Minnesota. My personal favorite, he signed a bill requiring tampons in boys' bathrooms. I mean, you talk about weird and strange. And his tax policy. Minnesota is among the top 10 states that saw the most residents move to other states that had lower or no state taxes. I mean, he's got a record. It's no wonder that Bernie Sanders came right out and endorsed him. What a lot of people are talking about behind the scenes, and I think this is very unfortunate, is that Governor Shapiro of Pennsylvania, a state that anybody needs in order to win the presidency, Governor Shapiro, who is Jewish, was passed over because of the anti-Israel and pro-Palestinian wing of the Democrat Party. I just think that that is very, very sad if that is the case, and it appears to be.
Big if that's the case. But the first two examples you gave of things you say that Tim Walz has supported, I wasn't aware of. I did watch a video today in which I saw an awful lot of his political views set out in his own voice. And it actually struck me is that he sounded like he could be an Irish government minister, that there was nothing about him extreme, there was nothing about him leftist, that he would be regarded on this side of the Atlantic as a classic centrist politician, Cal.
Well, of course not, Matt. I mean, when you're running for office, you're always a moderate. You're not an extremist, whether right or left. You come out with all of these statements that sound so reasonable. I mean, here is a guy who shut down the entire state during COVID and all the schools, which caused severe damage to students unnecessarily. He's a big tax and spender. Taxes have gone up 73% under his administration. Naturally, he's not going to talk about all of these things, but they're going to come out in ads and in speeches. J.D. Vance was just making a speech an hour ago in Philadelphia, where Kamala Harris is due shortly as well. And he was pointing out some of these things. So I think one of the problems, Matt, is that we have such a short time frame, 91 days now before the election. Kamala Harris didn't have to go through the primary process. She hasn't done an interview in 16 days. She hasn't been asked any questions. And now the governor of Minnesota is being picked as her running mate, and he's not going through any kind of process either. So that's of great concern to me. I mean, one of the reasons we have these primaries and the system that we have is that people can be properly vetted and there won't be surprises if they're elected.
Okay, Marion McKeown, U.S. correspondent of the Business Post. You've joined us, you've heard most of that. And J.D. Vance has accused his new rival for the vice presidency, Tim Walz, has been a radical leftist. You've heard Cal outline some of his complaints about Tim Walz. Do they stick?
No, but they'll do their best. There are vulnerabilities. I think this is a mistake, okay? Now, on the plus side, I think Tim Walz is an enormously likable guy. He's got a lot of energy. He's a football coach. He's good as a very kind of likable attack dog. But he is a luxury that Kamala Harris cannot afford, okay? And the reason I'm saying that is Minnesota, where he is governor, has voted Democrat forever in presidential races. They didn't even vote for Ronald Reagan. Okay, so that is a safe blue state. And in the meanwhile, you have Pennsylvania, which Trump is going all out to win, which he's slightly ahead in at the moment, and which he could very likely win. And there is no way for Kamala Harris to win without Pennsylvania. She also had a really good choice with Mark Kelly in Arizona, who has a really strong military background. He flew 54 combat missions. He's a former astronaut. He's a tough guy, okay? And I think that with all that's happening in the world at the moment, you have Ukraine, you have the Middle East, you have what's going on, the war in Gaza. I think that this is not the time for a genial, likable running mate who, you know, may bring a few more sort of moderate voters, but that's all he's going to bring.
Well, sorry, why not, Marion? Maybe is that not exactly what's needed? That instead of thing about where you have absolute opposites fighting, that you need somebody perhaps a little bit who looks a bit more centrist, as I would suggest, despite what Cal says, what Walz is, that he might appeal to people who are fed up with the bickering from both sides.
No, because when you have the Electoral College, if you had a real democracy, in my view, where every vote counted, where the person who got the most votes won, then he would be a fine pick, but not in a situation where you have to win these six swing states to win the election, because that's what it comes down to. And when it comes down to that, you've got to be strategic. You've got to get somebody who can deliver you a swing state. And Kamala Harris didn't do that. I think she ran a bit scared because John Fetterman, I don't subscribe to what Cal said about Josh Shapiro, who's a super smart guy, who I think would have been a great addition to the ticket anyway. I don't think it's because of any anti-Semitism or any anti-Jewish bias. John Fetterman and Shapiro have a long-running political rivalry, and he was going to kick up a bit of a trouble, possibly in Washington over it. She should have stared him down, I think, or else, as I said, gone with Kelly. But the pluses for Walz is he's not a leftist crazy liberal at all. And I think, you know, he's a guy who did introduce a lot of sound policies in Minnesota. But I think one thing that he is vulnerable on, which I'm surprised Cal hasn't mentioned, he passed a law that allowed undocumented migrants to get driving licenses. And that is something that Republicans don't like. And a lot of moderates don't particularly feel easy with either. And I think they will go after him on that. But as I say, I think that, you know, he reminds me a lot of, I don't know if you remember, and this might be the point, Tim Kaine, Hillary Clinton's running mate, back in 2016.
Who?
And
can't remember him.
Exactly. And that's exactly my point. A likable suburban dad guy that brought nothing to the ticket from Virginia, already a blue state. So I think that although Walz is a little livelier, he's a little more quick-witted, a little more entertaining, but he just doesn't bring what I think is needed.
All right, but let's hear a little bit of him, because he did an interview last week with CNN's Jake Tapper, and they discussed why Democrats have suddenly, in all interviews it seems, decided to refer to Donald Trump and J.D. Vance as weird, because Walz apparently is widely credited as the person who has started this trend.
So you've gotten some attention this week for calling Trump and Vance and Republicans in general weird. And I think that you're the one that set this tone. And there's this shift. The Harris campaign seems to be following your lead, echoing this language. Why do you think weird is a more effective attack line against Trump than what Democrats have been done previously, which is argue that he's an existential threat to democracy?
Yeah, and it's an observation on this, and I, you know, being a school teacher, I see a lot of things, but my point on this is people kept talking about, look, Donald Trump is going to put women's lives at risk. That's 100% true. Donald Trump is potentially going to end constitutional liberties that we have, end voting. I do believe all those things are a real possibility, but it gives him way too much power. Listen to the guy. He's talking about Hannibal Lecter and, you know, shocking sharks and just whatever crazy thing pops into his mind, and I thought we just give him way too much credit. And I think one of the things is when you just ratchet down some of the the scariness or whatever and just name it what it is. I got to tell you, Jake, my observation on this is, have you ever seen the guy laugh? That seems very weird to me, that that an adult can go through 6.5 years of being in the public eye. If he has laughed, it's at someone, not with someone. That is weird behavior. And I don't think you call it anything else. It is simply what we're observing.
And Cal Thomas, it seems that this has gotten under Trump's skin in particular, and Vance doesn't like it either. They do not like being called weird.
Yeah, well, it's funny he should bring up the matter of laughing when that has been one of the major criticisms of Kamala Harris, who is a cackler sounding like a chicken in a barn. Here's a guy, Governor Walz, who went on this thing called White Dudes for Harris and called one person socialism is another person's neighborliness. Now, what in the world does that mean? Does that mean he's in favor of socialism like Bernie Sanders? Sanders, who has just endorsed him. Look, these names and these labels, every political cycle, Matt, as you know, go through polling. And apparently threat to democracy wasn't working, so they came up with weird. You turn on any of the cable channels on MSNBC or CNN, and either from the presenters or from those Democrats who are being interviewed, they're all using the word weird now. So the memo has gone out. We're not going to use threat to democracy anymore. We're going to use weird. And that's been the word for the last week or 10 days. If that's not working, they'll pick something else.
Weird Al Yankovic, once a guest in this program, might be looking for a trade right or copyright infringement. But Marion McCune, is it amusing to see that it does seem to be getting under Trump's skin?
Yeah, but can I just get back? Cal, I think I'm surprised at what you just said about Kamala Harris sounding like a chicken cackling in a barn. That's beneath you. That is the sort... That's
oh,
you wouldn't say that about a male candidate, OK? So let's just put that out there. And can I... OK, let's get back now to Donald Trump. Of course, he actually came out and said, I'm many things, but I'm not weird. He doesn't like it, but I think this is... The Democrats have sort of grabbed onto it like a life raft. The novelty's going to wear off this pretty quickly, I think. Like, people have forgotten already... Donald Trump was, you know, there was an assassination attempt almost a couple of weeks ago. This cycle is moving so fast. And I think that it was a good throwaway line for, you know, a couple of days. But they need to come up with something better than that. That is not going to win the election for Kamala Harris. A new sort of tagline that gets under Trump's skin, as I say. I think that this, I feel the Democrats feel that because they have really gone from being underwater to being able to get their head up and gasp air, that they're acting almost like they're winning. They're not winning. They've a huge way to go. This election is going to be so closely fought, so brutal. We saw in Georgia that they had a glitch in their election thing where you could cancel anybody's vote by just having their name, date of birth, and county. This is going to be a really filthy, close-fought election. And I think Democrats are in danger of getting a little bit complacent at the moment.
Complacent. Wow. Okay, that's something we'll discuss more on all of this when we come back after the break, and also on how Robert Kennedy Jr. has admitted dumping a bear carcass in New York Central Park. As you do, that's after this. Marion McCune, Cal Thomas are still with us. Cal, Marion was there saying before the break that she fears that Democrats are becoming complacent. Surely there's nothing to be complacent about, because the polls would suggest, even if there is a shift towards Kamala Harris from where Joe Biden was, it's more or less neck and neck, isn't it, nationally and particularly in the six key swing states.
Yes, it's always this way, Matt, and I hope what I'm about to say is not beneath me, but it's always this way between the two-party conventions. The media is going to do a major build-up. You're going to have President Biden speaking the first night, kind of a farewell, thank you, Joe. Your face belongs on Mount Rushmore, as Nancy Pelosi has said, and it'll be kind of like a worship service if the liberals attended many of those. So I think that the polls are going to tighten closer to Election Day. Let's remember that the polls are often wrong. I mean, they had predicted Jimmy Carter was going to beat Ronald Reagan. They predicted that Hillary Clinton was going to win. So polls are only a snapshot in time. And a lot of people don't really respond to polls, or they are afraid to say what they really think. So I think the polls are only indicative of where things are at the moment. We have 91 days to go. Anything can happen, and probably will.
Of course, Hillary Clinton did comfortably win the popular vote over Donald Trump. It was just in the particular swing states. Exactly. That's not the way it works, because as Marion said, it's not quite democracy. Marion, an interesting one, though. Last week's controversy over Trump's claim that Kamala Harris only recently turned black. And this has just outraged an awful lot of people who felt this was just absolute blatant racism. Is there anyone, Marion, within the Republican Party turning up to say, hang on a second, whatever, he may be our guy, we may be behind him in the election, but this type of thing is wrong?
Oh, there have been several, and to their credit, there have been even people who you would regard as very conservative Republicans, even guys like Josh Hawley, who may be saying it more from a strategic perspective than from a perspective where he's genuinely offended, because he said some pretty shocking things himself in his time. But you've had a lot of Republican senators. You've had people like, I think, Lisa Murkowski, who was genuinely appalled, you know, who did come out and say it was so shocking what he said. It was such a slur on Asian Americans, South Asian Americans, such as, you know, and it was also blatantly untrue. Kamala Harris went to a historically black university. She went to Howard University. She was in a sorority there. She has never, you know, she just hasn't played these games. And for Trump to try and do this, Trump's whole modus operandi is divide and conquer, try and set people against themselves and against each other. And I think, and thank goodness, it really did fall flat there. It did him absolutely no favors, as it should not have done. And I think, you know, Trump is looking progressively less likable. And I think, again, having saddled himself with J.D. Vance, who is apparently the polls suggest the least, and as Cal says, you can't always trust the polls, but at the moment, he's the least liked vice president running mate in half a century. So, you know, there is, I mean, there certainly is something in Waltz, what Waltz is saying, that they do come across as this really, there is a joy in Kamala Harris that comes across, and, you know, people can mock or laugh or whatever, but she comes across as being this kind of ebullient. And I remember, and I said this on the show to you before, seeing her in the Senate and seeing her in various places, she has a huge smile. She's a happy warrior. So is Tim Walz, for all I've said about him. He's also a guy, they're people who you are likable. They're nice people. Yeah. They come across, the other two just come across as really people who are very, very hard to like, unless you happen to be in their MAGA cult, and then you worship them, you know, without thinking almost. So yeah, I think that Trump did himself no favours there with the broader outside MAGA.
Lots of listener comments. Select Shapiro, you lose the youth vote. Israel Gaza is toxic. Kelly was not an engaging speaker. Waltz all the way. Another one going back to George Bush, not a single vice P pick has been from a swing state. And another one that says it's genius of the Democrats to pick this guy as Kamala's running mate. If what Cal says about him is true, then all the Gen Zers who might not always have come out and voted will now come out and vote. This, coupled with his look, white older guy, will garner support of the older people on the fence who don't want to vote for Trump, including all the single childless ladies who will not want J.D. Vance now. Carl, what about the debate? Because it looks like, you know, you say that Kamala Harris hasn't done an interview for whatever it is, 16 days. But what about the presidential debate, which was slated for the 10th of September, that Trump is now running away for, wanting it moved to a different station to suit him? What do you reckon this is? Is Trump afraid of debating Kamala Harris?
I'm going to answer that, but I first want to say something about race. I grew up in segregated Washington, D.C. I saw a lot of this up close. I've written about this over and over again. I've written about the Skip Gates of Harvard wonderful series on PBS called African American Lives. And one of the things I've said in these columns that I've written is that there are no purebred people. We are all mixed up in the grand gene pool of life. So if you hate someone else for their race, you're hating a part of yourself. Now, having said that, to the debate question, Trump's excuse so far for not wanting to go on that ABC debate next month with Kamala Harris is that he made the deal with Joe Biden, and because Joe Biden has pulled out of the race, then the contract or the deal is no longer valid. I have a column I've just finished coming Thursday that urges him to do the debate. Otherwise, she's going to get 90 minutes of free airtime on ABC. I think it would be a tremendous debate. It would be an opportunity because she will not have a teleprompter. She will not be scripted. And this is her weakest time when she doesn't have a teleprompter or a script to go by. So I think it would be within his interest to do it. And I think he still may change his mind and do it. We'll see.
Okay, we'll see. Hopefully he will. So, something different, Marion. There's a third candidate, the independent Robert F. Kennedy Jr. What's this about him in a bear carcass and New York's Central Park?
Oh, look, he is such a clown. I mean, honestly, and, you know, I think from the get-go, we've just, he's like an even less almost likable Trump in so many ways. I see so many parallels between them. But anyway, let's get to your question. His version of the story, okay, a New Yorker profile was being prepared and fact-checkers phoned him to say, is it true? Robert F. Kennedy has lost friends in droves in New York and in other places, friends who are friends with the Kennedy family and who really dislike him for running against Joe Biden, but also because he appeared to be ready to get into bed with Donald Trump, who his environmental buddy said is the worst president in the history of America for the environment. So they're basically leaking stuff left, right and centre about him at the moment. And one of the things that got leaked, along with a photograph of Robert F. Kennedy sitting in the back of a truck or a car with his hand in a dead bear's mouth, trying to make it look like he'd been bitten by him, because the bear, who was a cub, his mouth was full of blood. Anyway, he claims that he did an interview with Roseanne Barr, if you can imagine, on Twitter about this, and it was just bizarre, trying to get it out there and spin it. He said he was driving along in upstate New York, heading out for a day's falconry, and a woman in front of him hit a bear cub with her van and killed it. So he said he picked it up and put it in the back of his van because he was going to skin it and use the meat, thereby trying to burnish his macho credentials further. And then he said he had a whole bunch of boring things to do or whatever, didn't get back in time. And so he decided, wouldn't it be funny to put it in Central Park, to dump it there with a bike on top of it, because they'd recently introduced cycle lanes, and it would make it look like a cyclist had killed the bear and abandoned its bike. Now, he was 61 at the time, okay? He wasn't 40. Okay. So anyway, this was his explanation for it. And it just, you just go, like I said, if he was 40, you'd go off.
You couldn't make that up, could you?
You could. This election.
Could I add something to that?
Bonkers election. Please do, Cal. I'd love to hear your take.
No. Well, you know, this fits right in with other things he said. He once claimed that a worm ate part of his brain, and he denied reports that he once ate a barbecued dog. He said it was a goat, not a dog. So I think that explains everything and fits in, with the bear story, if we can bear it.
And on that note, Cal Thomas and Mary McKeown, thank you very much for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.